Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 6, Episode 27. My name is Tim Mitchell. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I am joined once again by Jonathan Pooline in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
And Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
No comment. All right.
Oh, we're off to a rousing start. Here we go.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's better. Fact, it's really bad. yeah, I forgot what we were supposed to do our thing. Anyway, so we're going to start off with another keen check. He says here in our Slack channel that Rutherford received the model DS9 from Tendi at the end of season 2, episode 5, An Embarrassment of Dopplers. And I guess he says the comment that Rutherford says is, wow, this one has Jadzia and an Ezri.
You can't have too many Daxes.
Yeah. So, so which one is Ezri is the other Jadzia?
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, the other Dax. Yeah.
Okay, so Jadzia Dax and a Jadzia Ezri, is that the...
No, Ezri Dax. Dax is the symbiote, and Ezri and Jadzia were the hosts.
Oh, I see, okay. Oh, okay, cool. Right. Too bad I really liked Pharaoh.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on to the headlines.
Well, we're starting this week with some sad news, depending on your fandom of Harry Potter and or...
Top Gear.
Mm-hmm. Sad news today that Michael Gambon, the famous British actor, passed away today at the age of 82. He is best known as the second actor to play Professor Albus Dumbledore in the Harry Potter films after the unfortunate passing of Richard Harris after the first two. He is beloved by many and mocked by others. His unforgettable scene wherein he completely went off the book in Goblet of Fire and started screaming at Harry Potter for no good reason is still a mystery. I wish he'd resolved that before he'd passed away, if that was the direction or if he just kind of went wingnut. But sad news. Lots of Harry Potter fans out there today, feeling sad. Members of the cast, of course, paying tribute. And as Tim mentioned, there's a famous part of the old Top Gear track that was named after Michael Gambon, corner that you had to take, and was named after him. So,
is that because he went up on two wheels or something like that? Or
I believe that is the case. Yes, I believe he took a corner at two wheels. So they named it in his honor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gambon Corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, Bob. I think he was yelling at Harry Potter and Goblet of Fire to spur Harry on, wasn't he?
Well, no, because like, he runs into the room and he says, "Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire?" And
yeah,
in the book, it's like he's very concerned because he knows that he didn't, and is very like, it's just completely different read on that moment. So a lot of fans of the book series were very much like, "What the heck kind of performance? Like, where was he going with this?" So yeah, that one has always stood out for book fans as a. I think you missed the mark on that one, Mr. Gambon, but otherwise he was very memorable in 6 Harry Potter films and countless other things. He was in one of the Jim Henson projects, storyteller. He was in that, all kinds of stuff over the years, obviously a long and illustrious career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
in brighter and better news,
we finally saw the end of the writer's strike this week. Tentatively, the vote is not till next week by the full union, but it has been recommended by the executive that they vote and accept the offer. And so, yeah, 146 day strike for the writers of Hollywood, television and movie writers is over. There is lots of different articles out there about what they may or may not have gotten. It sounds like they got a lot of the concessions they were looking for. They're getting better staffing. They're getting better compensation. They're getting less use of AI. A lot of the things that they were holding out for. So, I mean, 4+ months of being on the picket lines, especially in a California summer, is not exactly the best, most fun thing you can do. But I guess if it paid off in the end, good for them. Now, the follow-up to that is that there is a story that they are going to meet the actors and the that are still on strike are going to be meeting with the studios and the executives of the studios next week, and hopefully they'll be able to hammer something out, because even though the writers can get back, that only means that some things can get underway, but obviously they can't start filming anything until the actors' strike ends. So, and someone, one of you gentlemen, has added in some of the details.
Yeah, the LA Times claims here, I don't know how actually there was a 7-page summary document. Okay. Cool. I wasn't sure if this was, one of those like sources say versus something a bit more direct here. But the four main things are higher pay for the writers, bonuses based on streaming data. So the big thing is they're going to get confidential viewership metrics, and they can share aggregated data. So they can't tell you that this episode of Stranger Things had some particular streaming data, but I think they can say in general, across all of these streamers, here's what we saw, up and to the right streaming is what I assume they can start talking about more concretely. Minimum staffing, as you mentioned, which this article makes me wonder if there's going to be some, changes to, or I should say more rigidity around what we see related to number of episodes. So for series with up to 6 episodes, 3 writers must be hired. For shows of 13 or more, minimum staffing is 6 writers, which can include 3 writer producers. All of this is unless a single writer is employed to write all episodes of the season. So if you're, penny pinching, as you are wont to do as a studio exec, I would guess you would probably try to make episodes fewer than 13 episodes, right? So let's pay attention to see if we start seeing more shows hit 12 or 11 or something, where they wanted to do more than 10, but they definitely said absolutely not 13, because we're not going to hire, 3 more writers, right? We're going to have 3 writers up to 12 episodes. That's what I think would probably happen there.
So yeah, definitely sounds like a progress for them.
Yeah, and then the AI one is, this article is not very good on describing. It says, companies must disclose to writers if any material given to a writer, and I'm quoting here from the article by Ryan Fonder, if any material given to a writer has been generated by AI or incorporates AI-generated material, which is a kind of a weird one. I thought there would be more limitation on there, so I'm kind of curious if this is the main thrust of the artificial intelligence topic that they want.
I don't know. I think in terms of the writers were concerned about, and everybody's kind of spooked by AI right now because of the whole ChatGPT thing, and they're all thinking, developers are thinking it'll replace their jobs because you can write code with AI, and writers are thinking it'll replace them because you can write stories with AI. And that, I think the concern was that, that, you know, it takes away from its derivative, as we've all talked about before, right? It doesn't really, even though it's artificially, you know, created, it's not any better than the human brain can come up with at this point in time anyway, right? So I think they were looking for guarantees that they weren't going to get replaced by ChatGPT type things, you know?
So that's what I'm picking at a little bit, that what you described is what I assumed they would be getting into the contract. But instead, it sounds more like a, oh, you're going to get replaced anyways, and I'm going to disclose it to you that, like, here it is. go script doctor this ChatGPT hallucination, you know? Like, I'm really hoping that more details come out, because this is the weakest part of the description here, because it's kind of the most difficult thing to describe, I think. So hopefully we'll see future resources that talk about this.
Right. I wonder if that is one of those weird concessions too, where the writers can say, oh, you know, you have to let us know if you're doing that. And then as soon as they're told they're doing that, they're like, yeah, we quit. We're not doing that. Because that's what I'd do. If I was working on a project and they were like, yeah, we're going to make you do this terrible thing using ChatGPT, I'd be like, yeah, peace out.
Yeah. Well, one sort of fallout from this is, I don't know if you listened to episode 7 of Strike Force 5. I found it really weird that they, I think, no, it was, they talked about the passing of William Friedkin, who is a famous director, writer, producer. And I guess because they're actors, or because they're part of the union, they weren't allowed to talk about the movies that the guy did before he died.
Interesting. Yeah,
so it was really, really kind of weird, right? So I want to just take a minute and, for those of you who listen to Strike Force 5 and kind of wondering, like I was, he is the director of The French Connection and The Exorcist, which were two huge films in the 70s, right? And he also lived to Live and Die in L.A. was one in the 80s, and then Killer Joe most recently in 2011, right? So been around the block a few times. And you probably didn't even realize that this guy, you know, was involved in a lot of these. Jade is one you've probably heard of. A bunch of Tales from the Crypt, you know. So, but I think, yeah, a couple of the Twilight Zone movie, he was one of the directors on that. But yeah, The Exorcist is a huge one. And he did The French Connection and then The Exorcist like the next year. It was kind of like 1-2 punch. Both were like, I don't know if they were best picture of the year, but they were up there in terms of the Academy's awareness, right?
Yep.
And back to you, Chuck.
Yeah, so we had talked a few episodes back about the physical copy release of Star Trek Picard and how there was a bit of a problem with one of the scenes that was in it that was supposed to be a virtual effects scene that was supposed to show one thing, but the physical release had actually used the wrong scene. And talking about just that was a bit of a mess up. And it was announced this week, TrekMovie.com had an article saying that they are going to, in fact, go back in and fix that error, and it will be fixed. What I didn't see in there, and maybe I didn't read far enough, but I didn't see if they said they were going to replace discs for people who have the first copy, or how that is being dealt with. But yeah, so they're going to go back and fix that VFX mistake.
Yeah, I sure hope they let people swap them out via, I think they've been done like through mail order and stuff like that.
I think they've done that in the past when there's been a glitched disc. They usually just say, you know, you send us yours, we'll send you ours. Although, again, right, then the question becomes, do you keep the collector's item messed up one?
Yeah, I think if you're a completionist, then you absolutely keep the messed up one and you buy a brand new, you know, pristine copy.
It happened a number of years back with one of the first DVD releases of Back to the Future. They had accidentally used a piece of it that was from a pan and scan version of it. And so it wasn't the right aspect. They had basically cut off a chunk of the original film. And people were immediately like, that's not what that scene's supposed to look like. And eventually they said mea culpa and sent out replacement discs because they realized that they had clearly used the wrong piece of footage.
This article points out that the Super Fancy Pants Legacy Edition set also includes an exclusive edition of The Wisdom of Picard. So that sounds cool, but I also feel like somebody should create a similar collection that is the sheer blanking hubris of Picard, because it sounds like a really good sort of collection that you could make, right? I mean, it's kind of enjoying all of the hubris moments. because that's a great quote. It's a great way to have a little bit of, you know, that full legacy is what I'm getting at.
Yep, that'd work. Next up, the trailer. We finally got a trailer. We're talking about when we're going to see Doctor Who's 60th anniversary specials. We were going to get a little taste. Well, we're no closer to the actual dates. They put out this trailer that gives us a good look at the return of David Tennant and, you know, a lot of familiar faces in this trailer. And yet it still just says November. So we know we're getting the start of they're doing three 60th anniversary specials. They did tease Chudikawa's doctor at the very end of the trailer. So whether that means this is all in the one special or this is all leading up to that, they haven't really made clear. But it was a bit of a trip down memory lane with this one. Tim, I know you're a big fan. What'd you think?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, to see Donna come back, the runaway bride. Mm-hmm. I think she was a doctor for a few minutes too, right?
She was. Yes, she was.
Yeah. In one of the episodes. I think they gave it away in the trailer that he actually erased her memory when he left her. And then, so now she has to come back and he has to rescue her again, apparently. So, yeah, we'll just see how it goes. I mean, it's interesting that the trailer ends with the new actor. I can't remember his name now. You just said it a minute ago.
Oh, Chudikawa. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So him appearing as a doctor. So I assume this is going to be, I think it's a three story arc, yeah, right?
And three episodes. Yeah. I think they're doing three specials.
Yeah. So they're going to do the proper regeneration to the new doctor after Jodie, because it went from Jodie to back to David Tennant's doctor, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it.
Interesting. So is there like any fan theory headcanon that, would you say her name was Donna? Like,
yeah.
You know, forgot who she was, renamed herself to Nellie Bertram, moved to the U.S. to join a small little paper company. Still,
she's Donna Noble, but she, she actually, it's funny. I saw her, what's her actual name again, Jonathan?
Catherine Tate.
Catherine Tate. Yeah. No, I saw her at Fan Expo, and at Fan Expo, they have these tables, right, where you know, you go and you pay to have an autograph and that kind of stuff. And they, you know, sometimes depending on if you ever pick up your phone, as if you're going to take a picture, bodyguards will jump in front of your camera to stop you from taking pictures of the celebrities, because you're supposed to pay for the pictures, right? But I saw her actually once. She climbed over the table and stood beside somebody and took a selfie with them. I thought that was really, really decent thing for her to do, right? So considering that, you know, like other celebrities, you have to go to the special line. And yeah, so I thought that was really cool. I know Tammy Coron, who's been on our show, David Tennant's her favorite doctor, and Donna is her favorite companion. So,
Yeah, I think those two have a special place for a lot of people, and not Matt Smith and Karen Gillan are my favorites, but those would be pretty close to number two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all we need is a date. A date would be good. If anyone is affiliated with this knows, a date would be good.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about Space Channel and Doctor Who, and they just kind of like, it just kind of shows up, you know, like without much fanfare, but as in the past. I think last year your friend told us about it coming on, right?
Yeah, a friend of mine who used to work there. This will be different though, because this will be the first year where the North American host for Doctor Who is Disney Plus.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yep. So
that's a shocker.
Yeah. I'm hoping what that means is we'll also get the back catalog there too. Cause right now there's no, off the top of my head, I don't think there's a Doctor Who streaming source.
Yeah, no. I think it's on Crave.
Is it still on Crave? I thought they'd taken it off.
I don't know. Let me have a look. Cause I was watching, I went back to, I think I was in the middle of, the first Christopher Eccleston season.
Oh yeah.
Three or four episodes in.
So it looks like there's 13 seasons on Max. I just did a quick search here.
Oh, nothing on Crave anymore. You're right.
Yeah, I seem to recall seeing that they were taking it down, because they did have it as like a featured section for a while, because they had it all.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's gone.
Let's go to Just Watch and see what it has to say for it. Because that's one thing that's always annoyed me about. I mean, just mind you, it's British television, but those video sets and DVD sets were always super expensive for Doctor Who. Like,
yeah,
way more than I'd ever want to spend, right?
Yeah, I think I have maybe two or three of them. I think Our friend Rick gave me the first season because I think that was how you and I caught up with it. And then I bought one of the Matt Smith seasons because I didn't want to have to wait to have it come out. And I wanted to catch up. So
the original season, original series, which is, I think, 26 seasons, it says, is on BritBox, or a couple of seasons are on Apple TV, but BritBox is season one, BritBox. So it doesn't really say where you can watch it. But yeah, it seems to have disappeared into the ether. It's in the what's it called? The World Between Worlds.
Yeah, as I say, it's quite conceivable that they pulled all the rights back, because I believe they are going to be licensed over to Disney Plus. So I would hope that in the 60th anniversary month.
I was watching on Pluto. Yeah, Pluto TV. Yeah.
Are they showing the new ones or just the old ones?
No. I was watching some John Pertwee and David and Tom Baker series. Oh. But that's what I remember. I talked about a couple of three or four episodes ago where like one story was like three or four episodes.
Yeah.
Like they had longer arc. They had maybe three stories per season kind of thing. And like traditionally in England, you get six episodes per season. But I think Doctor Who was like one of the exceptions, you know, which is why like Luther was only like, you know, six episodes for one, two, and three.
Oh, you know, it's less than that. Wasn't one of those seasons like three episodes or something? One of them was really short.
No, he did a special one. I think season four was like that, right?
Yeah.
And then now the movie came out. But no, he did season one and then season two, and then it was like a gap. And then they showed him a whole lot of money, maybe let him wear the crown jewels for an hour or something. And he came back and did the third season, because he had already got off and he did The Wire and the other things Idris Elba I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. But it's typical that England, like, same with the Doctor or Sherlock Holmes, they only did two seasons, and then they had to show them a big bag of money to come back and do the third one, which was The Hounds of the Baskerville. I think that's what you're thinking about. Sherlock Holmes is only three stories in the last season.
Yeah, I remember them being really short too. But then they do like the episodes were like an hour and a half each too, so it's almost like movie, movie, right?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, like, that's what it was. They did three. Like 2 hour episodes. Like normally it's an hour long and they do six shows in British seasons. Don't quote me on that. I'm sure we'll get fact checked. Go ahead, Keen. Hit me with a head with a whatever fact. All right. Anyway, back to Aimé this time.
The good news, everyone. I'm just going to read the title here. Amazon is sticking ads in Prime Video shows and movies unless you pay more. So,
hey.
Looking here in the US, United Kingdom, Germany, and Canada doesn't get left out early 2024, with later that year, France, Italy, Spain, Mexico, and Australia joining the you're going to get ads injected into your Prime Video experience, unless this mentions here for US-based Prime members, don't know about others, you can get an ad-free experience for an additional $2.99 per month on top of your existing subscription. So.
Is that because Jeff Bezos couldn't get his rocket off the ground, or what?
Oh, metaphors.
Right? That's a good one. I mean, it's not surprising, because I think for a long time, in my own calculation, I've said, well, we'll never get rid of Prime Video because we have Prime for other reasons in our household. So it's effectively, you know, a zero on the budget line. So they make it a little bit more similar to, you know, the with ads experience I have on Paramount Plus, or the with ads experience I have on Hulu. Not that big a deal for me personally. It's like, this is why nature gave me a smartphone, so I could do something else while they're showing an ad of something completely unrelated to my interests.
And this just in.
This just in. Yeah, I saw this actually the other day, and I meant to paste it in there, but Jaime's Amazon Prime Video story tweaked my memory. So I got an email the other day from the good folks at Disney Plus announcing that they are going to start their very own crackdown on password sharing starting in November. And they've also outlined that they are going to launch its own ad-supported membership in the fall, and have said basically if you either you have to accept the terms or cancel your service. And if you don't accept the terms, and you don't cancel your service, they take it as you accepting the terms, and you basically have like a week to decide.
Interesting. So I guess COVID is really over, right?
So they're doing the same thing that that Netflix did. So for $7.99 extra per month, You may what? Have another person use your service for you, but they, yeah, cannot, they will not allow you to, I guess, use a second location without some kind of validation. And yeah, apparently it's all going to come with different rates and all kinds of good stuff in here. So,
yay.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's what we need to do, is spend more money. So just for those looking to backtrack to our second story of the night, this just basically means that the writers are getting a really good deal and you're paying for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True.
We agree not to use AI. By the way, you owe us another $8 a month.
Yeah. I'm just Googling here, and I'm getting price increase too as well on Disney, right? So
yep.
Trying to get your article here written September 26th. Just for those who drive in at home, typically costs $11.99 a month, right? Or an annual of $119 Canadian. I don't know what it costs in the United States. Prime, it says is $9.99. I thought we get it with don't you get it if you're a member of Prime? You get automatically get Amazon Prime. That's how I get it.
Yeah.
All of these things are sort of needlessly complicated because you've got the traditional Prime service that you can pay monthly, or you can get it slightly cheaper if you pay all at once for the year. And then they unbundled the Prime Video piece from like the Prime shipping piece. It'd be like, all right, if you literally just want a video, it's very similarly some smaller amount per month or a slightly smaller amount in aggregate for paying upfront the entire year. And the Disney Plus thing, I got an email from Disney Plus saying, oh, yeah, like you're going to need to, you know, make your decision or change. I'm like, great. Let me go in. Let me choose out of this table of values that you've given me. Let me choose this one right here that has ad-free Hulu, ad-free Disney Plus. And anti-kudos to their development teams who have not allowed me to seamlessly do that now. I have to wait till October to make the change, apparently. Kind of a bummer. You would think they would make it or prioritize making this an easy thing of like, you know, if I can pre-order like an iPhone or a set of shoes, why can't I, you know, quote unquote, pre-order this change that clearly I will be paying more money than I am now to them, but less than I would be paying if I got these separately. It's really kind of weird.
Okay, Tim, you got to make the noise. You got to make the noise again.
The noise?
Do, 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 do. More breaking news. I just found a TechRadar article that outlines the increases in costs.
Yeah, no, I was just going to paste. I'm waiting for my, oh, here, my iPad finally caught up. I was going to paste in the link too.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's all paste links in. Everybody stop the show, paste in. Let's all paste links in. I can't get the stupid cursor to show up on this device. There we go. Okay. There's my link. All right. Don't want to feel left out on this article. All three of us have posted something.
No. Bring it in.
All right. So cool. All right, let's talk about Tomb Raider.
Yes, we have the first look. We don't know when this animated version of Tomb Raider, The Legend of Lara Croft, is coming out on Netflix, other than sometime in 2024. But it looks nifty. I enjoyed the Castlevania series on Netflix, and there's a new one that just came out that I have not had the chance to watch. So hopefully it does real good.
Hopefully they do a decent job on the stories, because the stories I like the third movie. I didn't like the first two movies. The stories were kind of lame, but or maybe it was the stiff actor who was playing Laura. I'm not sure.
I feel like you get a little bit more of a suspension of disbelief, and they can do something a little different with an animated series than, you know, a couple hour live action movie. So that might help things as well.
Yeah, I think the whole thing about Lara Croft, if you played the PlayStation games or even the Mac games and the PC games, you had to really suspend disbelief, because it was in the early days where the whole world was made out of 3x3 foot cubes, right? Even though they were all, you know, animated, whatever, but she only moved 3 feet at a time. And then when she jumped and grabbed on with her bare fingers and supported her entire weight as she landed and then was able to pull herself up, sometimes doing a walk-over handstand, you really had, like, it was all about suspending disbelief. It was all about just animating a character, I think, and the way the 3D worlds worked back then, right? So I think, as a purist Lara Croft Tomb Raider player, I think, you know, there's a lot of suspension of disbelief is required to play that game.
Yeah.
So I mean, now that we're live action and whatever, you know, CGI is caught up. But yeah, it was fun. Even the last iOS app that they just came out with recently, like in the last couple of years, this company out of Montreal has been doing them. It's the same cubic world. Like she only moves in 3-foot increments, right? Even when she's running. Mm-hmm. But that brings us to the main part of the show, which is to talk about Star Trek Lower Decks this week. This time we're talking about season 4, episode 5, empathological fallacies. Are those real words? Because they're not real words.
Fallacies is empathological is not.
Oh, yeah, but fallacies is two L's. That's what the problem was. My spell check was yelling at me. Yeah, it says empathological, or is actually two words, but I guess you put an A in the middle, you make a new word.
Yep.
Welcome to the structure of a German language.
I was going to say, welcome to portmanteaus by Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Right. Empath and logical fallacies being the combination there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Empathological. Gotcha. All right. So, elevator pitches.
I wrote Troy Tropes Trio.
Troy Tropes Trio. That's pretty good.
Troy Tropes Trio. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be Loxana Troy, not Deanna. So.
Yeah.
But the alliteration is what I was going for there.
Yeah.
Was Loxana one of the characters?
No, but the Betazoid illness was from a classic episode of DS9.
Oh, was it? Okay. Gotcha.
Yep. I had only an idiot can't tell the difference between vulcanized telepathic projection and Betazoid telepathic projection.
Yeah. Mine was actually going to be the title of the episode. Vulcan like an MFR.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was a very rousing speech by Mariner.
Yeah. By the way, just speaking of that, you know, I just noticed as I went back to watch Rutherford's the last episode. I want to see what that model was again. But when I paused the show and went back, it said, you know how they always have the rating in the top corner and they tell you like, you know, whether they're smoking cigarettes or whatever. It said coarse language. Now, I don't know about you, but every single bleep in there was like, there was nothing coarse about it other than a bunch of bleep. But are we supposed to infer that it's still considered coarse language?
I mean, I guess what they're doing is leading you down the garden path. And if you know, you know. And if you know, you know, then you know it's a swear word. So.
Right. And if you don't want your kids walking around going bleepity bleep, bleep, bleep.
Yeah. And, too late. That ship has sailed.
Yeah. Well, you know, your kids. Yes. Yes. I was bleeping. I was bleeping at the age of 7 too. So
yeah.
Anyway. All right. There was lots of action in this one.
Yeah. I, the one bit that just made me laugh and was also a great pew, pew, pew was, Dr. Miglimo versus the replicator, where at first he sort of loses his patience. He has this emotional outburst and he smashes the replicator, and then later on we see him firing a phaser at it, and then we see him wailing on it. Like, they just keep cutting back and he just keeps getting madder and madder. That made me laugh because he's just such a funny character. And then
when the illness is resolved, he just sort of whistles
walks away. And walks away. Right? Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, I thought the I don't know what they call themselves, the Strike Force, the what do they call the poetry, the slam poetry?
Oh yeah. Yeah, the security officers, yeah.
Yeah, when the red alert comes along and then they're running around and Boimler's trying to keep up and wait for me, guys.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course the beta Zeds on the with their stun sticks or whatever you call those things.
Yeah, right? The lipstick stun sticks. Yeah.
Yeah. The Zoids Mariner calls them, the Zoids.
They did have, what did she called them at the point? The Betazoid Intelligence Agency, the BIA.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What'd you have, Jaime?
I had the generalized pew 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 of the crew chaos to retake the ship. There's kind of a lot going on there in the background with like people with various weirdo objects in various states of undress. The alarms are going off, you know, the general chaos is what I wrote there.
Yep.
Well, there's always that's another Star Trek trope, right? There's always an episode where, I mean, I always imagine Sulu being all sweaty with the foil, right?
Yep.
You know, there's always been a let we all go crazy, because I think in the second, I think first season of TNG, the scene where Data and
Yar
end up, you know, going and trying out his equipment.
How functional are you, Data?
Yeah, but there was a crazy. It's not a mock time. It's what's it called? It was called the naked
Now. I think Naked Time was the original, and that one was the Naked Now.
Right. Yeah. So this, it was an homage, this was kind of the, because I mean, there were people scantily clad in this episode too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So same, you know, same sort of thing. Something takes over the crew and they all start losing their marbles, right?
Yep. Easter eggs, Jaime. You had to have loved Tsunkatse.
Katse. I think I missed the.
Oh, so when Shax is about to lead Boimler into the security room and he doesn't know what's inside, he thinks it's going to be like martial arts training or something. And he goes, Tsunkatse. And that is a reference to the one of the cheesier episodes of Voyager that featured a crossover with WWE wrestling that featured The Rock in a bit of mixed martial arts kind of combat sports episode of Voyager. That was called Tsunkatse. That was the name of the martial art that they did in the Delta Quadrant.
Ooh, that's a good catch, because I do remember that episode, but that reference went over my head.
And there was some game that Riker used to play, right? Like a ball game or whatever?
Oh, it was
like
the one where him and his dad beat the crap out of each other. Isn't that one? They did one of those with Mariner last season.
Yeah.
And they mentioned, this one had like a reference to everything, because they had that one, which is a Voyager, and they had Xanthi Fever, which is the one from DS9. That's the one where Loxana goes to DS9 and she can't control her emotions and she projects them onto other people. And they mentioned Bendai Syndrome, which is the episode of TNG with Sarek, and Sarek can't control his emotions and is influencing other people. And then later in the episode, they had a poster from the security office of Malcolm Reed from Star Trek Enterprise. So they're covering a lot of bases in this episode.
Yeah, I was initially thinking it was like the Man of the People episode from TNG, where the ambassador uses Deanna Troi as kind of like dumping ground for negative emotions so he can stay calm in negotiations.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think it's supposed to be the one where Sarek is, he can't control himself, right?
Yeah, because he's getting old.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that was the joke in this one, is she's, I'm only 62. You look great, by the way.
Yeah. 62, you look great, yeah.
I did write that as a little bit of an Easter egg, because it's Tulin's young age of 62 is very similar to Paul's young age of 65 that she mentioned to Trip Tucker.
Yeah, it's a running gag. And at one point, Mariner says, maybe you're just having a quarter-life crisis.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Worf, son of Moog, mentioned in the slam poetry ceremony.
That's right, yeah. And there was a bit of a dig on the Bajorans and their prophets when they're doing the tarot deck. Ooh, this is a good one. It means rebirth. They all mean rebirth.
Right.
Did we know before that Kaishans used to hunt and eat Betazoids? Now they only eat synthetic Betazoids now?
No, that's a new one, but it's pretty funny. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which brings us to the quote section of Mama's eating good tonight. And Dr. Ta'ana, all raged up, goes looking for Bajoran meat.
Yeah, she says you didn't bring a I didn't know you were bringing a buffet, she said, right?
Yeah. It's funny that they're all laughing about it too. Like the Bajorans are, or the Betazoids aren't mad, right? They're just like, "Oh, that was a long time ago that they used to eat us, hunt us for sport." So this is, I'm going to do the quote for this first and then the big questions. The quote is from Captain Freeman. This is sick bay. Hangover cures, prophylactics. Well, it's all available right here. And the question is, can't you just replicate your own prophylactics? You have to go down and see Dr. Ta'ana if you want condoms.
Well, maybe they're restricted in the replicator. Like they couldn't send a message today because of they had their own high security, right?
And also on
the Zoids.
I would like to just say that I really hope by the 24th century, maybe there's something better
than email,
than prophylactics.
Oh, yeah.
As always, so many funny quotes in this one. When Ransom gets shot down, come on, give me another chance. I can be distant and unavailable.
Yeah, I had that one too.
the one that sets when Dr. Miglimo gets set off. I said regurgitated soup, you stupid effing replicator. This barely tastes like it's been in my mother's mouth. Mariner to Lynn. Great job. You really Vulcaned it up out there. Where I drew my inspiration was, I'm sorry, I mistook vulcanized telepathic projection for Betazoid telepathic projection. I feel like such an idiot.
Around your other Mariner quote, I wrote down the I wish I could roundhouse kick this situation in the face, but I can't. It's one of the rare types of problems which can't be kicked.
That's a good one. I like that. Yeah. Almost always Mariner wins the quote ability scale. Like she gets the best lines.
Well, except the Vulcan like an MFR is what Talyn says, right?
Yeah. So they kind of move forward the underlying season plot of the mystery thing. So they said the Betazoids were aboard looking for clues into the mystery thing that's been destroying things. And now clearly, obviously, Starfleet's aware that this thing is going around destroying things. And they have a picture of the mysterious thing, but still no real answers. So I don't know that there's much to delve into other than to say to be continued.
Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about the Romulans. Warbird that shows up on the edge of funny. The neutral zone. And they're like, aww.
When we'll go lurk away. Somewhere else.
Yeah. What did you expect? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this show continues to be just on point as far as seeing the tropes and fully waving at them as they go by.
And so what's the significance? I recognized Wendy Malick's voice because at one point I wasn't looking at the screen and I heard her voice and clearly recognize her. But so the other two, well, Rachel Drack, I didn't catch that one in the show, but.
Yeah. So the brown haired Beta Zed was Wendy Malick. I picked her voice immediately. I knew the one for Dolores, the one with red hair, and that was Rachel Dratch. And then the one with the black hair and black skin was Janelle James. So all newcomers to the Star Trek universe, but all very famous character actors and comedians.
That girl. Yeah, I know that girl.
Yeah, I mean, Rachel Dratch, SNL, Wendy Malick, she's been in so many different things, and she's always super, super funny. And Janelle James, a great comedian. So yeah, it's nice to see some more new faces mixed in there. It's fun that they're letting other people play in the sandbox.
Mm-hmm. You forgot it's Romulan ale o'clock somewhere.
It's Romulan ale o'clock somewhere. I can't wait till that hat shows up on the StarTrek.com site.
I'm just scrolling through your notes for any more gems you forgot to mention.
Oh, sure. Last week you made fun of my notes, my copious notes.
Yeah.
My occasionally overindulgent notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where are we in the season? This is what?
Halfway. This is five out of 10 now.
Yeah. So we're going to get revealed at some point. It'll be Thrawn's ship or something like that.
That's right. From the galaxy further, further away in Star Trek. No, wait, that's the Delta Quadrant. We did that already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many quadrants have we? Which quadrant are we? We're in the Alpha Quadrant, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But we haven't done the Beta or the what's the letter C?
SETI?
Letter C is SETI?
Alpha, Beta, SETI, Alpha. Delta, Epsilon.
Oh, SETI. Okay, right. Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, did you have big questions? Because like I was struggling for one other than sort of the meta one. So we had some of Talyn's character arc partially resolved here, right? Where she decides to stay on the Cerritos. But there was mention in her discussion with Mariner, like it's kind of messed up that your captain like, you know, flipped out and had you tossed over here for what's rather, you know, minor inconvenience.
Yeah.
Rather minor insubordination. So I do have a question here of like, will that come into play later in the season? You know, somehow the Vulcan captain has to learn a little bit from his former ensign and, you know, save the day somehow by listening to his gut or whatever it was she had decided to go rogue on and thus complete her character arc.
Or the Vulcans will be the next victims of the mystery ship. And she won't have been on the ship, and then it becomes personal. Then it's Talyn out for blood. Yeah, no, you have a much smarter big question than my, can't you just replicate condoms? So, you win. And also, seriously, we can't just, like, zap it with a laser. We can shave with a, like, we see Geordi LaForge shaving with a laser. We can't use something to, no, nothing? All right.
Geordi shaves with a laser?
Yeah, we see that in one of the original TNG episodes. I think maybe season 3, season 4. At one point, he's standing in front of the mirror shaving, and he's got like a little laser shaver.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I often wondered why they shave on those ships. Because can't they just, you know, replicate no hair?
Hey, those pointy Star Trek, Starfleet sideburns aren't going to do themselves. You need some good grooming materials to do that stuff.
True. I thought only Kirk had those. Did any other people have those?
Yeah, there's a few characters that have had that over the years, the little swoosh sideburns.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Now should we move on to Ahsoka?
Yes.
The big questions. Ahsoka, Star Wars Ahsoka, Part 7, Dreams and Madness. So, your pitches?
I had Ahsoka and company learn it's really hard to win a game of checkers when your opponent is playing chess.
Mm-hmm.
I had Ahsoka races to find Sabine and Ezra while Thrawn is perfectly willing to run out the clock.
How about resource management Thrawn style?
Acceptable losses.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how happy I am that they actually cast Mads Mikkelsen as this part. His voice is just dripping with like performance. It's so good. He may not be like the exact, you know, the stature, the some of the little finicky details, but my God, is he good. His voice is so perfect for this role.
Mm-hmm. So where we go now? Do we go to best pew-pew or Easter egg?
All we'll right, do some pew-pew. So pew-pew.
Lots of pew-pew in this one.
Yeah, it was a very pew-pew-y episode, especially for one that in the end really didn't move things forward that much. I love the unarmed Ezra stuff. The you keep the lightsaber, Sabine. I'm good, as he goes through and just starts whooping butt with no need for a weapon, just using the force. Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. Because we saw Ezra in the last episode. We didn't really see Ezra. We just sort of got like, hey, how you doing? Good to see you. So this is the first time we get to see Ezra being a Jedi, being a real force wielder to be reckoned with. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I mean, to me, in the Rebels, I know in the later seasons of Rebels, he's meant to be a Jedi, but he still looks like a kid to me. Like, you know, like, I don't know, maybe it's just the...
Well, I mean, he's still supposed to be young. I think at the end of the series, I think he's still only supposed to be like 15, 16. Like, he's supposed to be young.
But he still has some impatience, even as a Jedi, right?
Well, and he dabbles in the dark side with Maul at one point, right? He has the holocron. Yeah. He has the Sith holocron. And he's trying to open it. And so he's always had a little bit of an edge to him, although it seems like he kind of resolved that towards the end of season 4, but he was always mm-hmm. a little edgy and a little dark, maybe.
Yeah, and you have a few, honey?
I had a few. Had the save the whales moment that was very interesting visually. You know, the space mine trap that they had, and maybe the most non-traditional as pew 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 was that Senator Leia Organa, she wasn't even on the court, yet she dunked all over Senator Jono.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple of articles that I thought were pretty misleading, the headlines on them this week, that said, you know, Star Wars resurrects this character. I'm like, what? I mean, you know, the story is chronological. She wasn't dead at this point, so it's not like they brought her back to life. They just kind of name dropped her. I mean, I think bringing back Tony Daniels is a bigger deal.
Tony Daniels?
They actually brought Anthony Daniels back as C-3PO.
Oh, C-3PO. Yeah, yeah. That was really weird, but yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you know, again, you can debate the merits of whether that was, you know, an unnecessary cameo, but it was still, it's, you know, C-3PO, man.
Yeah, they pulled that one over on us. We didn't see that coming.
No, no. I mean, there's no world in which I thought, well, we'll probably see Anthony Daniels reprise his role.
Although he's been in every single series, right?
Was he?
I'm just trying to think. Was he in? Was he?
I don't know. Has he been on? He's been in the movies. He's been in all the movies.
Yeah, that's what I meant. But I mean, yeah. But was he? Was he in?
I don't think he was in Andor.
Kenobi. He wasn't in Kenobi because.
But you're right. He was. He's one of the like true constants.
Yeah, but Alec Guinness never recognized him when he saw him in episode 4.
I don't seem to recall owning. Oh, that guy! I'm just gonna pretend I don't know him.
Yeah, or isn't that the one that the Darth Vader made when he was a kid?
Yeah.
I look at it as more like, you know, I've got this brand new iPhone 15 Pro here. You know, if it was not talking to me, if it didn't have its screen, if you took mine and you threw it into a pile of a bunch of other ones that are similarly colored, I probably wouldn't be able to find it all that easily. Or, you know, 10 years from now, remember that this one was mine versus just being yet another one that you might see on the street.
Oh, like that's a harsh blow for droid rights there, Jaime.
I think that's how they treat them, though. They treat them not as sentient or semi-sentient beings. They treat them more like, you know, just tools or phones.
Like AIs? Yeah, no, they yeah.
Wow.
But every character addresses the droid they know as if this is like my dog, you know, like my own dog. It's not just a lab, right? This is my dog, right?
Yeah, or a person. I mean, you know, like, I don't think Luke treats 3PO like he's annoying, because he is, but he does. He treats R2 like an equal.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Well, because they're same with oh, what's the droid in this show? Yeah.
Droid.
Baloney voices.
Oh, Huyang.
No.
The little
like Chopper. Do you mean
Chopper? Yeah. Thank you, Chopper. Yeah. Like, Chopper is a whole character under himself. He's almost like Laurel and Hardy rolled into one, you know?
I heard a great discussion on a different podcast last week about, is Chopper a genuine, like, homicidal maniac? And the consensus was yes. Like, he legit murders people. Like, there's an episode in, I think it's season 3 of Rebels, where he, like, straight up murders, like, an entire crew of a Star Destroyer. And laughs while doing it. Like, he's not right in the head.
Maybe.
I mean, not in a bad way. He's hilarious, but genuinely kind of evil.
So this senator, what's his name?
Shiono?
Yeah. I mean, I was just looking at your first quote here. And like, this dude is, there's definitely something going on with him. Like, is he like an agent of Thrawn or something?
No,
I mean, I think, like, he refuses to see that the Empire is rebuilding.
I think it's willful ignorance. And yeah. I think he is supposed to be the avatar for what's wrong with the New Republic and why eventually their bureaucracy fails them and they crash and burn. I think this is Filoni continuing to hammer into place the pieces that prop up that sequel trilogy.
Right. Yeah.
Which, I mean, good on him, but man, what a thankless, awful role that is to be Senator Shiono, who's just like, your job is to look like a buffoon who can't see the world for what it is, while we, the omniscient watchers, know that you are a fool. That is not a lot of fun to play.
Well, I mean, then they keep throwing back at Hera about her, I mean, other than, like you said, we don't know what's been happening between the end of Rebels and here, but I don't see Hera going out of her way to find Ezra or, you know, at all. Like, and that's what they all accuse her of doing. Like, she's not manipulating the situations to send, you know, Sabine off to find Ezra, right? Sabine's more obsessed about it than anybody, right?
And it's funny, too, because, I mean, obviously, yes, there are protocols and you're not supposed to do certain things, but, like, I guess the idea is that she has done these kinds of missions before, and this was the final straw. But you're like, she took her own ship and her own kid and left because she wanted to pursue something on her own. And a few people that she's friends with were like, cool, we'll tag along. And it was like, what, like five X-Wings? Yeah, a couple people died, which that's what they should really be ticked off about. Like, hey, you brought these people along and they're dead now, not like you disobeyed an order. But I think this is all just to speak to the fact that already you're supposed to start seeing that the New Republic is a bit of a mess, and therefore it's easier to understand how we get to where we get to when The Force Awakens starts. So it's just chipping away at it, and it's fine. I mean, I get it, but I wish they wouldn't focus so much on trying to salvage that trilogy, which not a lot of people have love for.
Yeah, it's weak writing, in my opinion. Like, it just, like, I'm like, okay, can we get on with it? Just find some way to shut this guy up, you know?
Yep.
And they do. I mean, they do, you know, having to drag C-3PO out and, you know, deliver a letter from Leia is, you know, convenient. Or is that the setup for that, the fact that Anthony Daniels is going to be on the show or whatever, right? So, or a mention again of Leia. But, I mean, like, yeah, this guy's a dick. Like, I just, like, the least enjoyable part of the show, because it's like listening to, like, Toronto politics or, you know, Ontario politics. Like, you know, who has time for it, right? We know that the politicians are jerks, and, I mean, there are good ones, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, you know, like this sort of, like, just for the sake of, it's stupid politics, right? And it's the part about politics I don't like, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the whole thing, right? It's supposed to be, it's funny though, because what they're essentially saying is that no matter how good your intentions, you'll get caught in quagmire of politics and bureaucracy, unless you're a ruthless fascist, which is what the Empire was. Well, admittedly, they got a lot of stuff done. Sure, they killed a lot of people. I'm not sure that they're really selling the right argument here. They're really good
at resource management, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think they might, you know.
They employed a lot of people. They gave them a place to sleep and eat and, you know, walk around with a plastic suit on, you know, like.
Yeah, you know, three squares and a helmet, you know, just saying.
It's like, you know, Randall's argument in Clerks about the second Death Star, right? You know. It employed a lot of people, right?
So. I guess we did see that in Andor, right? Everybody there had a roof over their heads. They had food. They had clean facilities.
They didn't even put doors on their cages. I mean, come on.
but Hera, like, you know, in Rebels, it's like I'm sure they were part of some sort of mission or what. I mean, they had all their little missions that they went on, but. But she was kind of left to her own with the team, like the, you know, the five or six of them that were there, Zeb and I keep forgetting Kazon. What's the name of the Jedi that died?
Kanan.
Sorry? Kanan.
Kanan Jarrus.
Kanan, Ezra, you know, Sabine, like the crew, including the Bumbler robot. I can't remember his name again.
Oh, yeah. The one, the Death Star droid.
No, the little trash can guy we just talked about a minute ago.
Oh, Chopper.
Chopper, yeah. And, you know, they kind of just ran missions and, you know, they called in for help when they needed help, but they were, I don't ever remember there being like an Empire, like the Chancellor of the New Republic didn't call her on the, you know, on the holophone and say, you know, like they were just on the outskirts doing their thing or on Ezra's homeworld. Right. You know, so yeah. I don't know. I just find the transition to this is awkward. Cause I mean, like, how could she go for, I mean, yes, she's a general, but she was a general in the series before, wasn't she, Hera?
Yep, she was.
Yeah, so she was left her own to do her own thing, right? So I just find it's an odd transition from there to here. But let's move on. Let's talk about some of the things that they said, maybe.
Well, the Easter eggs, I guess, they were all pretty out there on Front Street, right? So the C-3PO talking about Princess Leia, that was a pretty obvious one, not really an Easter egg. When Ezra is catching up on where everybody is, he talks about how the Emperor is dead, and Sabine sort of says, "We think so," which is pretty funny.
And
talks about the Battle of Endor, and then mentions Zeb. So this is the first time, and we're like seven episodes into an eight-episode series where we hear reference to Zeb. So I'm guessing at this point we aren't going to see Zeb, which is a drag, because what that means is that little cameo, that little moment that we got in Mandalorian Season 3 was all that was set up for was this is what he's doing, so leave us alone when we get around to the Rebels season five. I mean, Ahsoka series. And yeah, so that I don't know. I miss Zeb. He's such a great character. Zeb and Chop and Ezra are great together.
Yeah, the three of them were like thick as thieves, right? They ran most of the stories and capers and things. It was,
well, they were always just up to Ezra, sort of goofy hijinks, those three. Right? Yeah, yeah. So, got to go find some Meluruns. Any other Easter eggs? How many did you see anything?
They mentioned Asajj Ventress and Count Dooku.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Ventress. That one still bugs me a bit. Anyway.
Yep. But you got to mention.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess that's it. They mentioned the three characters there, and then that's their moment in the sun. All right.
Quotes?
Well, you got all the quotes.
Well, I mean, you don't know that. Maybe Jaime's got them in his head. Maybe he's got them on a notepad right in front of him. You don't know.
I have mine in my notes app. Mine was C-3PO's identification. I do not need to show you identification.
Was that the badges? We don't need no stinking badges?
Yeah. He was trying to bust his way into the
conference
room, courthouse. I can't remember exactly. Senate. What were they? The big.
Oh, it's when they were trying to do the court martial, right? They were.
I guess
in the court martial hearing.
Yeah. Do you know who I am? Oh, the food is hot. I'll need a tray. I get it.
I had the one that we referenced earlier from Hera. I don't know what frightens me more, the possibility of what might happen or your unwillingness to see it, which, again, is foreshadowing, obviously, the sequel trilogy. Big burn line from Thrawn. Jedi are very good at hiding. They have been practicing that for years. Oh, that was such a nasty burn, especially in that voice, too. You're just like, oh, you dick. And then from Baylan, one parting lesson, Shin, impatience for victory will guarantee defeat. That felt like one of those lines you would see at the beginning of a Clone Wars episode.
Yeah, there is a big question that comes out of that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Ezra, when he turns down getting his lightsaber back, the Force is my ally. That's all I need. I am one with the Force, and the Force is with me.
Yeah. That's actually what came to my mind. I didn't write that as a quote, but I was like, wow, that sounds so much like the Donnie Yen character in Rogue One.
Yep. Hu Yang, well, they're all back together. I hope I live long enough to see the outcome.
And he's whipping around.
Another nasty burn from Thrawn. Ahsoka Tano has lost the one thing she cannot afford to lose. Time. Time is very much on our side now, and I shall keep it that way.
Dun, dun, dun. Resource management. Dun,
dun. Yeah. Oh, he's so good. He's like such a great villain.
So I have a different big question than you do on your notes here. So Shin. When I think it's Ezra that reaches out to her and says, "We can help you."
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the forces are retreating, and she does turn around and run. I guess she runs and joins one of the ships taken off. But like, what is that about? Because she's not, like you said, she's not really a Sith. She's just a Jedi that's been trained by a bad guy or semi Jedi, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Do you think she hesitated for a minute because she was actually considering joining them?
My take on that was she was weighing her options. Her options were, what is most likely to get me what I want? Because there's a line earlier in the episode where Baylan is talking, and Baylan sort of says, you know, go and take care of them and take your rightful place at Thrawn's side. So like, you get to be the Vader to his emperor or whatever.
Right.
And I think in that moment, we're supposed to have her sort of be thinking, what's my best play here? What's my moment of success? And I don't know. I didn't read that as her being like, well, maybe there's good in me. I took that as like, what's my best way to win what I want?
So I was reading something earlier this morning as I was getting up. There's some fan theories around Shin and Sabine as an item.
Oh, I mean, people have been shipping that for weeks, and it's because, I mean, you know, well, it's funny because there's that weird line. I think we talked about it back when they did episode one, where Sabine is watching the hollow of Ezra, and he says, you know, I think of you as a sister or whatever. And I've had a whole bunch of people who took issue with that, because if you have watched Rebels, you know that that's not how Ezra felt about Sabine. Ezra really, really, really wanted to get with Sabine for a lot of that series. Now, towards the end, I would say it became more of a respect and friendship than it was lust. But he was lusting after her for a long time. So it felt weird to have him deliver that line. And then when they finally do reconnect, there's no like heat between them. It's not like she was like, oh, actually, you know, so you see me as a sister, eh? Like they kind of have a nice friendly, but there's no chemistry. There's no crackle between them. But during those fights, those three fights now that we've seen between Sabine and Shin, there is chemistry. Like there is heat coming off the two of them. So I get it.
Yeah. And also the way that Shin looked at Thrawn when she finally saw him. Right. So like, does she trust him or, you know, because without Baylan, she's got to go deal with him directly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which but brings then, us to your big question.
Well, yeah, I mean, so this episode, basically, you know, Ahsoka finally gets to the planet. She jumps out of the ship. She comes down and lands, of course, right next to where Baylan is. And Baylan is basically like, you know, I can't let you interfere. The two of them have a bit of a duel. And, you know, he is, even when he dismisses Shin, he's sort of referencing the fact that he's there for a larger purpose, that he was called here. He can hear this voice in his head calling him. And we didn't really advance that beyond digging deeper, like he's digging his heels in deeper, that he's not there for Thrawn. He's not there. And it doesn't seem like he cares about getting back. He's there for something. And they still haven't tipped their hand too hard as to what it is.
Palpatine?
I mean, I don't think so, because he sort of says, you know, I'm not really here about a new empire. I'm not really here about ruling and power. I'm here for a higher reason. So the question is, like, what? Now, some people have speculated what he's there for is to, you know, do something as far as ending the Jedi legacy, that there's a sort of a larger contribution to being finally done with the Jedi and starting something new. But I don't see how that's coming together yet.
Well, you also mentioned Maul last week, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still am curious. I mean, I think I'm going to stick by my prediction that what's being loaded into the ship is sarcophagi filled with, you know, some horrifying evil to be unleashed across the galaxy far, far away, our original Star Wars galaxy. The idea being that, you know, hey, we've already tried robots, so you can kill as many of them as you want. We've had stormtroopers in masks, but then even that's been spoiled a little bit by the fact that, you know, we now know that there's people under those masks, not just clones. So what's the thing that you can have a bunch of good guys fight lots of? And the answer is lots of dead people. So.
Mm-hmm.
So get ready for the Walking Dead Star Wars edition coming in subsequent seasons.
Is Daryl Dixon going to be in it too?
You know what? It's quite possible at this point. I wouldn't put it past anybody, but I don't think they own that property. It's one of the few they don't own, but
yeah, Star Wars, Daryl.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm really curious to the resolution of this. Of all the things that are outstanding, I mean, are they going to get back? Yes. You know, is this going to continue into the next season of Mandalorian and the next season of, you know, Ahsoka, Boba Fett, whatever they do next? Yes. Is this story going to wrap up in a nice tidy bow next week? No, it is absolutely not. Mm-hmm. This is all about setup for the big next conflagration in the galaxy far, far away, the next Star War. So the question really comes to me that I'm most interested in is, what is Baylan's big play? What is the thing that he's there for? Because he's been very, very good. And again, really sad, you know, to see Ray Stevenson and playing this part for his final role. And he's been so good. I wonder if he's killed off next week. I wonder if he is left behind next week. I wonder what the end game is for that character, because he clearly has one, and they've been building to it in a very interesting and subtle way. And again, I think I'm pretty good at reading through these things, and I haven't put it together yet. So I'm going to roll that around in my head all weekend and see what I can come up with. But so far I haven't got it.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at the clock and saying, well, unless it's a 2-hour finale, they're either going to have a serious hold my beer definitive ending, or this is going into cliffhanger territory.
Yeah, I mean, I always saw this series as never intended to wrap up in a nice tidy bow. This is all stage setting, because we know that it's building towards bringing all of these properties. You know, they aren't going to bring Ahsoka and Luke and the Mandalorians and all this these different parts together. Again, Sabine's got the Mandalorian legacy too. All of this is going to come together in some sort of giant crossover, whether it lasts for multiple seasons before they do this sort of wrap-up movie, or however they decide to carry this forward. There's no way they're not going to milk this for a while.
and sort of have Thrawn and Thrawn's forces be the big bads as they go forward, especially since they killed off Moff Gideon last season. So scale of 1 to 10, how psyched are you for the last episode? Do you feel like you're going to get everything you hope this series would be by the time it ends?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, they've got a long way to go. They've got far, far away to go, right?
Yeah. But the ship's almost like loaded. Come on, Thrawn told us that.
Yeah, but what are they going to do? Like sneak in and hide in a Jeffrey's tube or something? Or
well, the Star Whales sure said peace out. The Purgles were like, oh, there's mines here. Yeah. Hope you had a nice trip. Bye. Which, fair. Which, for the record, and you know, I love you too, but the three of us pop up and there's a minefield and I have a way out. I'm gone. I'm out.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll keep that in mind. All right, let's move on to the watch list. And you're up first, John.
Yeah, so last week, Jaime had flagged that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem was on Paramount Plus. I had watched the first half of it before we recorded, but I didn't have a chance to finish it, so I did finish it. And it was enjoyable. It wasn't everything I wanted, but it was certainly a refreshing take on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I certainly enjoyed it more than the live action stuff that I've seen over the past few years. And it's definitely a little more sort of on the cusp of, you know, trying to do something a little bit different. It really does kind of, you know, ground up different take on it, how they got their abilities, you know, they're all the same through lines, but, you know, they mixed up a bunch of stuff and it was fun. I enjoyed it. They were clearly going for something a little bit animation like Into the Spider-Verse, but it wasn't quite as good in my opinion. At sometimes it was almost a little distracting that they were trying too hard, but I would say overall it was a solid B effort. Like, it was enjoyable. It resets the foundation for more movies. They clearly have teed up sequels in this first movie. And yeah, it's interesting because it almost takes the route of doing the, like, the primary villain of this one is who you would have expected to be the villain in like a sequel. You know, like, they basically were like, no, we're not going to give you spoilers. We're not going to give you Shredder right away. We're going to start with some of the other mutant characters, the other different supporting characters from TMNT, and then we'll build up to bigger and better things. And that was cool. They didn't feel the need to pull out the big guns on game one, right? So that was fun. Yeah, I'd recommend.
I mean, what do you got for us?
That's good. I'll actually maybe swap my picks here because having watched the Super Mario Brothers movie, mm-hmm. I would say it's kind of the opposite. Like, you know, it did well and it's entertaining in a like DreamWorks Illumination kind of way. But I think they did the opposite of what you just described, where I'm like, wow, they really kind of, you know, shot their shot here. I'm like, what do you have left for the sequels? You kind of packed a lot into a breezy hour and a half movie. But if an hour and a half is too long for you, you can watch this just under 6 minute ultimate Super Mario Brothers movie recap cartoon, which is humorously done, great style. And it basically is the movie condensed into the most absurd sort of take on each of the scenes. Very, very enjoyable. The art style is something I like. It looks like they have other videos on the same channel that do the same kinds of things. So it's kind of neat. I like seeing the mixed media kind of stuff.
Sure. You can do short tricks, Jaime?
Yeah, yeah. My second one was the holograms all the way down short tricks, which is, I mean, you can't even write down the Easter egg. So it, like, not to ruin too much, it starts out with Star Trek Enterprise with Tucker, T'Pol, and I think Reed. And then it's just like turtles all the way down, right? Like so many sort of deep cuts into a very breezy, you know, 2 minutes of short Trek. So really, really, really well done. I don't want to spoil too much other than, you know, I was trying to keep along in my head. I'm like, yep, okay, I know what you're talking about here. I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, wait a minute. Now I'm starting to lose it. And it just got to be too much towards the end, which I think was probably the point.
Yeah, it was, as they all have been, it was stupid funny.
And all sort of plausibly happened. Like I said, like all through it all, I was like, okay, this kind of makes sense, until towards the very end, I was like, well, okay, this is getting a little weird, but maybe looking through the timeline of stuff.
Yeah. I think there's only one more, right? I think next week is the last one.
Okay. Good thing that you knew, because I wasn't sure how many they were going to have.
Yeah. I seem to recall it was 4.
Good to hear.
Right. Tim not loving quite as much.
No, I'm trying to get to my picks here, but you know, so I accidentally started watching One Piece, the live action version, last week. I watched the first episode and it's very strange. I'm like, what is this about? It's obviously a crew of you know, ninja type people or, you know, talented people who come together, but the one main character with the really weird, capabilities, was odd. And then I found out that it's actually based on an anime. So you guys probably knew. I think you know, Jaime, it was your pick like a couple of months ago, right? One Piece. Are you talking about it? Yeah, we talked about it, I think, coming in the show.
It's massively popular. It's a thing that I have not seen myself, but it's got like a bazillion episodes. So it's kind of like the anime and the underlying manga have a bazillion editions, where it's kind of intimidating to get into at this point. So the Netflix series is something that has been on my list. So I'm glad that you chose that there. And I guess it says here that it's been renewed for season 2.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. It was interesting enough that I probably will go back and watch the rest of it at some point. I mean, it wasn't like sometimes you watch a show and you're like, oh, whatever. And it was refreshingly different. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, what's that guy that was on Mars? The William S. the Burroughs story.
Oh, John Carter.
John Carter. It was a bit like the movie, John Carter movie. It's a little bit like the Johnny Depp stuff, the
Pirates of the Caribbean
movie. Pirates. It's very similar to that, but you know, I don't know. It kind of almost seems like, you know, it's shot on the sets of like Life of Brian too. Like it's out there, you know. And they're pirates, obviously. So there's water involved and boats and things like that and all that kind of stuff too. So it was an interesting sort of thing to sort of stumble across. I just sort of saw it there and went, what's this? And just started watching it. Anyway, just before we started recording today, I noticed that First Blood was on Paramount Plus after I watched the Lower Decks. And so I started watching. I still got 15 minutes to go back and watch. But yeah, just a good classic movie if you've never seen the original Rambo. They kind of ruined the character in the sequels. They used to do that a lot in the 70s. They would have a really good movie and then they would bring out a sequel and it would just drive it into the ground kind of thing for money. But yeah, like the it's such a good performance, you know, sort of a mistaken intentions kind of, you know, cop, bad cop, corrupt cop, you know, takes on this character who turns out to be like, almost like, I guess, Jason Bourne type character too. Like he's got talents that that aren't obvious, right? But it's interesting too that you see Sylvester Stallone standing next to Brian Dennehy and Caruso and some of the other actors that are in it that are, you know, pretty well known. How short he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's, because, you know, you always think of Rocky as being this big giant, you know, character, but he's actually just a typical Italian, like 5'7", 5'5", kind of thing, right? And then I've been binging Justified. It's my guilty pleasure right now. I'm halfway through season 3. I probably watch like 3 or 4 episodes a night, kind of thing. It's a really compelling. It's a bit like Kentucky's version of Breaking Bad, right?
Yep.
So it's really, really good. And saw here a note on. There's a couple of things actually. One, I did notice there's a Rick and Morty trailer which I haven't seen yet. I don't know if you guys noticed it. But tomorrow or today or whenever, wherever we are right now, The Creator is coming out, which is a sci-fi movie starring, let me click.
John David Washington.
Yeah, Denzel's son, right? So that's looking pretty cool. I mean, it's sci-fi, it's modernistic. They probably gave away the plot in the it's a bit like Terminator, I think, in a sense.
Yeah, it's basically the AI versus the humans at war, and this is the end game of it.
Yeah, sort of thing. So, but it's going to be in IMAX this weekend. So who knows? Maybe I'll go see it. We'll see. All right. That's it for me. So I guess that's it for another week. So Jonathan, people who can touch with you, where would they find you?
You can always find me on Twitter and Instagram as at JPK News or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, people can get in touch with you.
I'm on Twitter as at Dev of the Hair.
All right. Still hanging on, waiting with one foot on the dock and one foot on the boat. He's still on Twitter. And my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on Twitter, or formerly known as Twitter, X, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all those places, Threads, Instagram, look me up. And until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
I'm glad you're enjoying Justify, because that is, don't feel guilty about that one. That's a great show. And it's funny because you think like, oh, you know, I love Timothy Oliphant. I'm going to love this show. But Walt Goggins is the star of that show. Yeah. He's amazing in that show.
Yeah. And you go back, well, he was also in Sons of Anarchy, right? He played a trans, right?
I have not seen
Sons of Anarchy. And he was also in, he's only in like the third or fourth season of that. But, he was also in, there was a unicorn TV show called The Unicorn.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that.
I think that was sort of, he was sort of like a single guy, wife had just died or whatever, and his friends were all like, you know, 30s or 40s, or, you know, at his current age. And his friends were all trying to set him up and stuff like that. But the weird thing about it is like, you watch him on Justified and you forget that he doesn't actually have a Southern drawl. He is from Georgia. Right. But he doesn't have that deep Kentucky drawl that he has in the show. Right. So.
Yeah. No, I love that show. It's so complete. I'm looking forward to your total watch of the whole thing, just because it really has some through lines. Like, again, the relationships are complicated and interesting. The relationship between Raylan and his dad, the relationship with him and his ex-wife. Like, there's so many interesting parts to that show. And yeah, like, it just, It there's no real lulls. There's no spot in there where you're like, oh, that was actually, that season's not as good, or, oh, this is a bit of a down. Like, it's just consistently enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because it's based on Elmer Leonard, right? Like, and it's
based on one book, right?
It's based on like one story that he told, and they kind of ran with it from there. And they did work in some other stuff from some of the other books, but it really does feel like a Leonard novel come to life.
And what other stuff has he done, like, that people would know?
Elmore Leonard.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones that people probably know the most would be like Jackie Brown. Which was the only thing that
Tarantino made.
That Tarantino ever adapted. He didn't write himself. So that gives you an idea of how much he loved that. Yeah, so that was Get Shorty.
Is he the guy that did L.A. Confidential as well? Or that...
Yes. Right. He did Out of Sight. He did Get Shorty. I'm just going to look up his Be Cool. Yeah.
And these were books, not necessarily screenplays.
These are books that got adapted. So like a ton of his stuff. The Big Bounce. Yeah, lots of stuff that he's done has been adapted. But he was a prolific writer. Like, he just cranked out books at a pace that most people could not imagine. I've only read a couple, and I've enjoyed them. I have always intended to go back and read more of them. Like, I've never read the ones from which Justified is originally conceived. That was Fire in the Hole.
But yeah, I think from what I have read, it was definitely very, it's sort of neo-noir. He writes like a little Dashiell Hammett-y, little like Maltese Falcon-y kind of mystery novel stuff, dime store novel stuff. But just dripping with darkness, bleeding in around the edges of everything that he does. Like, everybody's got an agenda. Nobody is truly good or truly bad. Like, the complexity of this show, where like there are times where you're kind of rooting for Goggins' character, even though he's a monster. And there are times when you're like, actually, Raylan's kind of an ass too. Like, he's not a great guy. So there are times where you really are kind of conflicted. And that's my favorite kind of storytelling, when you get these really complicated characters where you're like, yeah, I'm rooting for you, but I'm not sure I'm your biggest fan.
Yeah, well, right now I'm dealing with Neil McDonough's character, Quarles, Mr. Quarles.
Oh, yeah.
The guy from with the suits.
Yeah.
And nobody ever checks his arm. I find really interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Keep watching.
Yeah. No, I'm halfway, like I said, I'm halfway through that season, so. Yeah, and you're right, each season has a sort of through line, and Jeremy Davis is Dickie Bennett.
Man. Oh, so good.
He's really good in every movie he's in. He's that same, I don't know if he ever, I don't know if I've ever seen him not be a quirky sort of character.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there's, and it, that's the show straight through, like so many of them, there's just these, like, even the sort of side characters have this like layer of complexity and just, they're all very vivid. They feel very real. There's not a lot of contrived sort of nonsense. Yeah. You're like, yep, all these people could clearly be people you run into anywhere all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like all tying into the inevitable month I hate the most, October, where everybody just has everything horror and blood and guts. And
oh, really? Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
I can't stand. One of my favorite comedy bits is a bit by Lewis Black where he's basically like, if you're a grown up and you want to dress up and go out for Halloween, don't, because you're an adult. You can dress up 365 days a year if you want to. If you want to go to work dressed like Batman, you can. You don't need to wait for a day. That's for children. And that's how I kind of feel about it. Like, some people just get really into it. And I'm like, yeah, I was into it too. And then I turned 12. Also, my wife gives away all our candy. And I don't like that.
It does?
Yeah, oh. She gives out candy to children, strangers that come up to the house. I'm like, that's our candy. Don't give away our candy.
Yeah. No, that's my job too.
Giving away the candy? Or guarding the candy so it doesn't get given away.
No. Carol goes off and she buys all the candy and then she takes Quinn and they go off trick-or-treating and I'm left at the front of the door like a schmuck, you know? And so me and Max sit there and give out candy, right? So
I did very much enjoy the trick-or-treating part when I had kids that were trick-or-treating age. I really enjoyed going trick-or-treating with the kids. And now that I don't have kids that age, I want to turn off the lights and not go outside.
And hide?
Yeah.
That's just mean.
Well, you know where we live, too. The opposite side of the street has, like, straight houses, and my side of the street has, like, breaks, because there's, like, two houses, and then a road, and then, like, four houses, and then a road. So nobody walks up our side. They all walk the other side, because there's more houses. You get more candy. Smart kids. I get it. So we buy like enough candy that we're going to feed like 600 kids and then like eight of them show up. So, you know, I'm like, just turn the lights out. They don't care. They're not coming by.
Yeah. Well, our neighbors always used to do that too.
Just turn the lights out.
They would just, the next door neighbor, the new neighbors have kids. So they do trick or treating and stuff, but
yeah.
Yeah. No, I just went to the rabbit hole. Cause I clicked on Peter Murnik. He's the guy who plays Tom, you know, the state trooper.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
On his IMDb page, there's a trailer for a movie called Body Parts, which is not starring him. So I don't know why, you know, what that's about and why it's like on his page. Maybe he's a character in it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the name of the actor who's the star of Body Parts, but I've seen his face before. Hmm. Let me scroll back in time and see if I can figure out who the hell he is. This guy's been in a lot of stuff. It's surprising. Like, he's another one of those that guys, you know?
Yeah, they are all over the place.
How long ago was Body Parts made? Quantum Leap. He's even Quantum Leap. That's how long ago. Oh, Body Parts, 1991. Mark Draper. Who's Mark Draper?
Mm-hmm. Let me look him up.
Brad Dorst in this one.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, he played Mark Draper in the story.
Hmm.
Horror. After losing his arm in a car accident, a criminal psychologist has it replaced with a limb that belonged to a serial killer.
Oh, I remember that movie. This is how I have my cultural touchstones on these things. I remember that movie because they advertised on the back of comic books. Because back in the day, that's what you did to get kids to want to go to your movies, was you advertised horror movies and sci-fi movies in comic books. Because there was no internet yet that people were using.
Yeah, that's true. Although I have no idea who this Jeffrey Fahey guy is.
The guy who's the star?
Yeah, his face is familiar.
He was one of those guys. I recognize him from like a bunch of shows.
Yeah, but he was the star of this movie. He was a star of Body Parts, but he Lawnmower Man. I guess he was the Lawnmower Man.
Mm-hmm. That I did watch.
Yeah, he was in Lost.
Yeah, I remember because he has very very light blue eyes. I remember that being like quite distinctive feature.
He's pretty old now.
Well, aren't we all?
He's the old guy now with the hot girl on his arm.
All right, I'm going to call it early tonight because I have to be in the city by 8 a.m. So I'm going to go and
lucky you.
Get some effing sleep. Yes, I have to go to a conference tomorrow. Yee-hoo.
Which one?
It is the Chima Healthcare Conference.
It's not the Excite one. I listened to your show the other day.
Oh, yeah? The one with Dr. Tam?
Yeah, Dr. Tam. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, it turned out well.
He was a pediatrician,
Yep, she was. Yeah.
Do you do the same episode in French, or is it you get a different guest on the show in French?
We've had people who can do both, and we've had people who have done both in the same month, but I would say we've only done that maybe 3 or 4 times. Most of the time we have to get someone, because the guests we look for, there isn't an equivalent, or they're not bilingual, so we end up having to go find somebody else. So for the French episode, this last one that just got published, we had Dr. Tam, and then we had the deputy chief officer of health, Dr. Howard.
Is Dr. Tam bilingual?
She speaks French, but she's not a confident French speaker. She can read.
Okay.
She can read it, she can speak it, but as far as like engaging in discourse, it's not her strength. So they said they would prefer to have Dr. New go on in her place on the French episode. And so yeah, it is what it is.
Cool. All right. Hi, me. Bye.
Talk to you later.
Bye. All right. See you guys. Bye. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.